Committee to order. I will move how, so what we're going to do is we're going to work on the Nash bill for a while, then a couple Erdahl bills that hopefully won't take too long. And then, of course, Erdahl has to go meet with the governor, so we will send him off to give the governor our best. And then we're going to go to a David's bill. I have a Dr. John, are you a doctor yet?
Yeah.
Okay, Dr. John Spry. And we want to get right to him because he's using up his spring break members to be here today, so that's important. And then we'll get into the other bills. So with that, I will move House File 1544. Did we amend that at all yesterday?
Nope.
There's no amendments. Okay, so I think if it's okay with you, Representative Nash, we'll get right into testimony. I have on my list, we'll go in this order. It'll be Amali Moylanen, Clearway, Minnesota will be first. I'll go to Dr. Lisa Mattson, Dr. Russell. Okay. Oh, is Simonson here?
Yes.
Oh, Representative Simonson moves the minutes of March 25th, 2015. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, all fairs say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Simonson. Okay, and I understand there's a lot of meetings going on right now, so members of the tax committee will be in and out. So let's go. We're going to go in this order. Molly Moylanen, and then we're going to go Dr. Lisa Mattson, Dr. Russell Lupker.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I could ask to have the minutes reflect that yesterday when we started this, I did bring fantastic freshman suites, yes. And that you gave me permission to not bring them today.
And I am still feeling them, so yes.
I appreciate that.
So you did a very good job, by the way. And then a Hannah Simmons, American Cancer Society. So let's go with Molly Moylanen. If you could please join us and state your name and who you represent for the record, please. And then provide your testimony. And then we will be cutting out at about 10:30 to accommodate Chair Erdahl. And so please state your name and who you represent, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Molly Moylanen with Clearway, Minnesota. We're a statewide nonprofit committed to reducing tobacco's harm in the state of Minnesota. I'm here today on behalf of Raise It for Health, a coalition of organizations and nonprofits that work to advocate for the tobacco tax increase in 2013. Now, the coalition has significant concerns with Representative Nash's bill, which would walk back the progress that we have already seen from the work the legislature did in 2013. Research this year has shown that the tobacco tax has already reduced smoking in Minnesota by motivating smokers to quit, and 20,000 fewer students are smoking today than just 3 years ago. The tobacco tax increase is also projected to save millions in long-term health care costs. While it is true that cigarettes are more commonly smoked than cigars, that's no reason to apply different rules to them. They are no less addictive and no more healthy, and there are no logical reasons to give them special preference. The new premium cigar carve-out was created in 2013. Before 2013, cigars were taxed just like all other non-cigarette tobacco products, and there was no cap. We were opposed to the change in 2013 because over and over we have seen how the tobacco industry manipulates product design to take advantage of loopholes and special definitions. For example, you may remember how the tobacco industry repackaged cigarettes as so-called little cigars to take advantage of more favorable tax classification. There is no reason to believe that today's issue is any different. So let's break it down. If this proposal moves forward, the maximum tax on a cigar will be reduced from $3.50 to 50 cents. That's an 85% cut. Furthermore, the tax on a $4 cigar would be 50 cents. A $10 cigar, 50 cents. A $20 cigar, 50 cents. A $100 cigar, 50 cents. Now, my job is reducing smoking in Minnesota, but I have to ask the question, would we really tax a Cadillac Escalade the same exact dollar amount as a Ford Focus? To me, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't seem like good tax policy, and I know it's not good health policy. This proposal only benefits one entity, and that's the tobacco industry. It's bad for everyone else. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moylanen. And you said this bill would be an 85% cut. When it was last raised, what was the increase?
In 2013, the tax on all other tobacco products was increased from 70% of wholesale to 95% of wholesale. But there was a new definition put in for premium cigars, and the tax was capped at $3.50.
Okay, members, you have two things. I have no idea where they came from. They were passed out. Who do these come from?
They're from me, sir.
Okay, let us, next time, please let us know. We usually like to have a member put their name on so we know that they're legal. You know, we don't want people selling Amway products here or something like that. So, okay, any questions for Ms. Moylanen? And Amway is a fine company, fine products, SA8, LOC, Neutralite vitamins are just wonderful, delicious. Okay, any questions for Ms. Moylanen?
You're not promoting them, though.
What's that?
You're not promoting them, though, right?
I wouldn't do that. That would be shameful. Okay, let's go to item next, Dr. Lisa Mattson, former president, Twin Cities Medical Society. Did you get beat or something? Or
it's a year-long term.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, okay, please state your name, who you represent, and present your testimony, please.
I'm Dr. Lisa Mattson. I'm a gynecologist who lives in Plymouth, District 44A. I'm here representing Twin City Medical Society. I'm also a gynecologist at the University of Minnesota, Boynton Health Service. And before I went to medical school at Mayo, I was a teacher. I taught advanced biology and chemistry at Wayzata High School.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much.
You said you're with which medical society?
Twin City Medical.
Twin City Medical. Okay. Very good. Please proceed.
Okay. As a teacher, I still consider myself an educator while I'm practicing medicine, and I do a lot to help my patients make informed decisions. So I want them to have accurate information. Yesterday I heard some testimony that I didn't think was very accurate, so I'm hoping I can provide you with some more accurate information so you'll make a better informed decision regarding legislation 1544. Cigars are very glamorized in today's society. We equate them with success and celebration. We oftentimes will talk about closing a big deal, popping a bottle of bubbly and lighting up our cigar. Yesterday I heard people talk about cigars as kind of a way to end a hard day or to enjoy doing a leisurely activity. But cigars are not benign. It was mentioned yesterday that cigars are made up of tobacco. It's multiple forms of tobacco rolled in a tobacco leaf. That's the definition of a cigar. Tobacco is organic. But with anything that's organic, we know in marketing things that they like to use the words organic and natural to trick our consumers into thinking that these are healthy. Organic does not necessarily mean that it is healthy. Tobacco contains nicotine, which is the addictive component of tobacco. It also contains 19 other carcinogens. So cigars most definitely do cause cancer. We know that nicotine is absorbed through the lungs, and a lot of people will argue that people who smoke cigars don't inhale. But nicotine is also absorbed through the lining of the mouth. That's why with chew, you're going to have people put a pinch between their gum and cheek. You still absorb the nicotine that way. As a gynecologist, this is concerning to me because for women, the leading cause of cancer death remains lung cancer. Another very unknown fact is that when women get nicotine into their system, whether through smoking or other means, we're going to find very high levels of nicotine in, of all places, their cervix. Now, we know that 99% of cervical cancer is caused by the human papillomavirus, and to put this in very simple terms, the human papillomavirus thrives on nicotine. So when I'm dealing with my college women with abnormal pap smears crying in my office, one of the first things I tell them to do is stop smoking if they are smoking and quit. Or stop smoking if they aren't and quit if they are smoking, because we know smokers are more likely to develop certain cancers. Now, Minnesota has always been striving to be the healthiest country or the healthiest state in the country. And this is one of the things I'm very proud of about living here. I think we do have an excellent health care system. And I think that maintaining the price of tobacco products has been shown to decrease the number of people who smoke. We've also got data. This is a white paper that I helped author this February that showed that over 60% of people who chose to quit smoking did so because of the cost of tobacco products. Tobacco is simply tobacco. All nicotine comes from tobacco. And we need to do everything we can to minimize the use of tobacco products in general. We need to, as leaders, to be promoting exercise, healthy eating, maybe an apple instead of a donut. And we also need to discourage all tobacco use in our community. I strongly urge you to leave the tax on premium cigars where it is currently. House File 1544 only serves to move the health of our state backwards and not forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mattson. Any questions for Dr. Mattson? Thank you very much. What we'll do now is we're going to go over to the Erdahl bill, so we'll temporarily lay this one over. We'll bring it back. I will move House File 1955, members. You should have that in your packets. Is Representative Erdahl here? Representative Erdahl, is the A2 amendment yours?
Yes.
Okay, I will move House File 1955. I'll now move the H1955A2 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have 1955 as amended. Could you briefly, I know you're on a time schedule here that you need to go see the governor. I hope you'll give the governor the tax committee's best, if you would.
I certainly will, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, if you could please describe your bill as amended, sir.
Thank you. House File 246 expands the mentoring provisions currently in statute, requires the adoption of a mentoring program for new teachers.
House File 1955?
I hope so.
Did you say 246?
Did I say 246?
Yeah, I think you did.
Yes,
you did. Oh, I meant 1955.
I was surprised I was speaking.
That's in another generation.
Okay, thank you. House File 1955 is amended.
Yes. It provides for the adoption of a mentoring program for new teachers, makes staff development money available as an eligible source of funding. Now, the tax provision, staff development money may be paid in stipends to mentor teachers, and that amount may be subtracted from individual federal tax income. We lose 40% of our new teachers in the first 5 years. I believe that more support in those years would help retain and lead to better teachers. That's it.
Thank you. Are there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of House File 1955 as amended? Anyone with concerns? Would the department like to testify? we don't have the department here, so we will go over with Mr. Cummings these bills to see if he has comments at a future date. Questions for members?
I'll say I've had numerous conversations with the department on this.
I'm sure you have. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, Representative Erdahl, I'm looking at the summary, not the bill. But allows school districts to use staff development revenue or other funding sources to pay a stipend to a mentor who may be a district employee or third-party contractor. And I assume the contractor, the proposal here to make this germane to the committee's jurisdiction, Mr. Chair, a third-party contractor could also receive the tax benefit for the stipend.
Chair Erdahl.
And can you just speak to that, please?
Whoever is mentoring.
Chair Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Third-party
contractors, kind of like mercenary teachers?
Chair.
Representative Dabney, there should have been an amendment on this that, and at least I hope it is in here. It should say licensed education administrator or licensed teacher, not third-party contractor. The intent was to remove that a bit ago.
Ms. Manzi, was that in the amendment?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Chair Dabney.
1.14 and 1.15 on the amendment. Ms. Manzi, is that correct? Mr. Chair?
Ms. Manzi?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, that's correct. The summary reflects the bill as introduced, and if you look in Section 5 of the bill as introduced on 7.17 to 7.18, that's where the third-party contractor language is, and that's replaced with the language in the amendment.
Mr. Chair, said I was working off the summary. So, thank you very much. Thank you. My apologies.
Thank you. I did make the change. So,
other questions for Chair Erdahl? With that, I will move that House File 1955 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Item next, I will move the Erdahl Bill 1956. Is there an amendment? Seeing no amendments. Okay, I'll move House File 1956 to your bill, Chair Erdahl. Oh, first of all, is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify on behalf of this bill? Anyone wish to testify with concerns? department is there in another meeting, I guess. Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Most teachers, student teachers in Minnesota now have a 12-week or semester course in student teaching. I believe they can be better prepared to teach and are less likely to leave the profession their first few years with a school year-long student teaching program. This establishes a year-long pilot student teaching program within MinSCU utilizing one to two institutions. The Commissioner of Revenue must report to us on the impact of allowing an individual income tax credit for year-long student teaching. It does not establish a tax credit, but allows for the reporting of the feasibility.
Okay, questions from members? And with that, I'll renew my motion to House File 1956 to be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Erdahl. Please give the governor our best.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank all of you for your cooperation so I can go fight the Civil War. Thank you.
I hope it's not that serious.
We're ringing bells.
I'm trying to work with the governor, Chair Erdahl.
Thank you.
Thank you, I think. Okay, item next, we'll go back to the Nash bill. We're going to go to Dr. Russell, and I hate pronouncing people's names. Is it Lupker or Lupker?
It's Lupker.
Lupker.
And you did very well the first time.
Okay, Lupker. Wonderful. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Russell Lupker. I'm a cardiologist at the University of Minnesota. I'm also Mayo Professor of Public Health and a 30-year volunteer of the American Heart Association, and I'm here in that capacity.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to join Dr. Mattson and express my strong disapproval for House File 1544, along with any effort to seek to provide tax relief to the tobacco industry. I personally testified 2 years ago on increasing taxes in tobacco products and was pleased to hear the legislature decided to increase taxes on all tobacco products, including premium cigars. Research demonstrates that raising the price of tobacco helps people quit, prevents youth from ever starting, and saves lives. Just this year, we saw the percentage of adult smokers in Minnesota reach an all-time low of 14.4%. Our efforts to make public places smoke-free, we just did that at the university last summer, including streets and other areas under our control, raise the price of tobacco and provide cessation treatment, is working. Why would we want to undermine those efforts by giving a tax break to premium cigars? So what are the health effects of cigars? The facts are well known and not in debate. Cigar smoke, like cigarette smoke, contains toxic and cancer-causing chemicals that are harmful to smokers and non-smokers who are around smokers. Cigar smoke causes oral cavity cancers, the lips, the tongue, the mouth, the throat, cancer of the voice box, esophagus, and even the lungs. For those of us who've cared for victims of these cancers, and I have, this is a horrible way to die with a mouth cancer. Cigar smoke actually carries a higher level of cancer-causing compounds, nitrosamines and tars, because of the way it is cured, higher than cigarettes. And premium cigars, those we're discussing here, can have 20 grams of tobacco, the same as a whole pack of cigarettes, in one cigar. Some say cigars are safer because you don't inhale. You still get oral cancers from that. But people who have smoked cigarettes and switched to cigars, which is fairly common, or they do both, inhale. We demonstrated that years ago. And so they have the same exposure to heart attack, something I'm interested in, and many other illnesses as those who smoke cigarettes. Let me add just one final observation for those who are watching our relations with Cuba develop again. Cuba, we would argue, is probably the source of best premium cigars in the world. I think there's little debate over that. I expect Cuban cigars to be imported legally in this country in the not-distant future, and they will be premium cigars. I have no desire to subsidize Cuba by lowering the tax rate on premium cigars. So in summary, there's so much work that you as a committee have to do this session that will benefit the citizens of our state, that including House File 1544 in your final tax bill is not one of them. The harmful effects of cigar smoke are well known and not debated. I strongly encourage you to stand up to the tobacco industry for the health of Minnesotans and refuse to give tax breaks for premium cigars. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lupker. Any questions for the doctor? Chair Groffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And just so members know, actually, because of the recent actions of the Obama administration, it is now legal to bring a certain amount of Cuban cigars back to the United States already, just in case anyone's doing any international traveling, you can do that now. So just a lot of people might want to know it's already legal.
Thank you, Chair Groffel. Any other comments or questions for Dr. Lupker? Thank you very much, Doctor. Really appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, next testifier, Latricia Vitaugh, Breathe Free North.
Did we do our Gargoyle?
Where's Breathe Free South?
We have no competition.
Okay. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and provide your testimony.
My name's Latricia Vitaugh, and I'm the program coordinator for Breathe Free North. That's housed in North Point Health and Wellness Center in North Minneapolis.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. As a part of my job at Breathe Free North, I work to educate families of color, primarily in North Minneapolis, on the dangers of tobacco, secondhand smoke, how we're targeted as a population by the tobacco industry. I myself am a cancer survivor, so this is just more than work to me. It's actually my passion, working in tobacco. When I heard about this proposed policy to drop the price of premium cigars, I had to ask myself, who's really behind this? And we've already heard that the tobacco industry is probably behind it. More than likely, they're behind it. That's their business. But beyond that, who stands to benefit from making expensive cigars cheaper? I suppose there's a certain type of cigar smoker who will benefit from this. I think it would be everybody's stereotypical cigar smoker, a fat cat in an expensive suit in a town car that has a $100 cigar every day. I suppose a person like that would be happy to see this bill come law. It might save them some money for their investment portfolio or something. Some people in this room might know people like that. I personally don't. But here's something that a person like that might not realize. The cheapest premium cigar costs about $5. If this bill goes through, the price of that cheap cigar is going to be cut almost in half. Now, if there's a person who's more likely to buy a cigar that costs $2.50 than a cigar that costs $5, what kind of person do you think that is? It isn't Rich Uncle Moneybags. I can tell you that, like, first off, it's not that at all. When you push down the price of tobacco, it hurts who it always hurts. It hurts low-income people. It hurts many minorities. It hurts kids. But it pushes tobacco down into their price range. A pack of cigarettes in Minnesota today costs $7.50. For many people, that's a lot of money. Enough money for them to say it's not worth it. But $2.50. Maybe that's another story. That could be worth it. A lot of young people start smoking that way because of the pricing. A lot of kids give their older friends the money to buy tobacco. And I witnessed this firsthand working with youth. That's why taxes like this one you're talking about, repealing, keeps kids from starting. Maybe the fat cats don't realize that. Maybe they realize but just don't care. But I hope that everyone on this committee today cares, because if this passes, it might save Uncle Moneybags some money for his portfolio. It might save the tobacco company some money for their legal defense fund. They need it, right? But it's going to hurt the real people and the kids. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? Thank you very much for coming. The next person, Hannah Simmons, American Cancer Society, and then members, my intentions to discuss the bill. Is there anyone else from the audience wish to testify for the bill or with concerns? Just don't want to leave anybody out here.
I'm well. Thank you.
Okay. please state your name and who you are for the record. That's my intention to go to member questions, and I have on my list from yesterday Earhart, Dabney, Lanchesky, Anderson, S. Please state your name and who you represent, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Hannah Simmons. I'm a resident in Farmington, Minnesota. I am a volunteer with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network, and I appreciate you allowing me to share my story with you today.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. So I'll never forget the first time that I saw my dad cry. I was 8 years old, standing next to him as he looked down at my grandmother lying in her casket. She was only 56 years old, and colon cancer claimed her life. And at that age, I didn't know what cancer was, but I knew that if it could take her from us and bring the strongest man that I knew to tears, then it was the most horrible thing that I had ever heard of. Fast forward 10 years, and it's my mother's heart who's broken as my other grandma, her mom, passed away from lung cancer. What did my grandmas have in common? They were both smokers. And in fact, when I was putting together my testimony today, I thought of my family, and almost every single one of them are smokers. My parents, my siblings, aunts, uncles, cousins, myself. I'm a former smoker, too. Most of us started in our early teens and smoked a combination of cigarettes or cigars over the years. I didn't get the memo about not inhaling. So I thought cigars were a pretty good deal when I was young because they did last a lot longer than cigarettes. All of us made multiple attempts to quit. Some have been more successful than others. But the two most effective motivators that actually made the greatest difference has been the increase in tobacco tax and the implementation of the Freedom to Breathe Act. I myself quit several years ago when the price of cigarettes increased, and my family and friends who have been able to successfully quit say the same thing, that the high price of cigarettes and cigars, as well as the inconvenience of walking 30 feet, 50 feet from some buildings trying to find a place to smoke, has been enough to help them quit and actually stick to it. Unfortunately, the ripple effect continues in my family. Many of my loved ones have already suffered from heart attacks, stroke, emphysema. Smoking is the number one cause of lung cancer, and long-term smokers are more likely to develop and die from colon cancer. So has our smoking increased our risk and cancer across all members of my family? Absolutely. That's why I urge you today, please do not roll back this cigar tax. Cigars contain the same cancer-causing agents as cigarettes and are just as deadly. Worse, they actually emit more secondhand smoke than cigarettes. Price does impact personal choice. And if you make cigars cheaper, you're making them more appealing to more people. And that includes adults and young people alike. I would give anything to have my grandparents back, to keep my loved ones who are living healthy. I'm a new mom. I have a 3-month-old son. His name is Dane. I would do anything to keep him from picking up a cigarette or a cigar in the future. And so I ask you to please keep moving our population health forward in a positive direction and protecting the next generation of kids from this deadly addiction. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Simmons. Questions for Ms. Simmons? Thank you very much for your testimony. And you said you had a son, Dane?
Dane.
What school will he go to? When
he will be at the Farmington Public School District.
Are they like the Tigers or something?
I think so. I'm starting to pay attention a little more.
It's a fine community.
Yes,
fine community.
It is. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Okay, with that, we'll go to member questions, and then we'll, after that, we've got three bills to go. Just to try and get some of this stuff figured out, Chair Carlson, you have one witness?
Yes.
Okay, I have Dr. Spry, and then Chair Dabney, do you have any witnesses? One witness. Who is that?
Let me.
Well, you can just so I have it.
Lava. Let me get the name right when we get up there.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So let's go back to member questions, and then we'll wrap this up. Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, I was in Cuba about 7-8 years ago, and I actually watched. I was with some legislators, as a matter of fact, and we were one of the tours was on a tobacco plantation, and we met with the owner of the plantation and his family, and he explained to me why
the real name for a premium cigar is not because it's hand-rolled. But on advice of counsel, I'm not going to tell you what his explanation was. So thank you.
Don't tease us.
Can we talk afterwards, Chair Earhart? And do you have my dime from yesterday?
No, I spent it.
You spent it? Big spenders. Okay, thank you, Chair Earhart. We'll talk after. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming this is a question for Ms. Moylanen.
Okay, Ms. Moylanen.
If she can return.
Join us, certainly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Moylanen, looking at the revenue note, I see, if I'm reading this correctly, estimated cost to the state of this of about $2 million, a little over $2 million for the biennium, going up slightly in the next biennium. As I recall, when we raised tobacco taxes significantly last round of this legislature, the rationale was the cost of tobacco use to the state. So I'm looking at a revenue note that says $2 million, a little bit better than that. Can you speak to the actual costs of tobacco use to the state of Minnesota, please?
Ms. Moylanen?
Absolutely. Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, we know that tobacco use costs the state of Minnesota nearly $3 billion in excess health care costs every year.
Chair Dabney?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Moylanen, this may not be for you, it may be for others, but if it's $3 billion that it costs the state, do you know how much of that cost we recapture through taxes?
Ms. Moylanen?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Dabney, I do not know the current estimate on the complete tax revenue generated through the tobacco tax currently, but I know it does not nearly come close to covering the health care costs that the state incurs.
Thank you, Ms. Moylanen, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Chair Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I was really, I think, just on the list because Representative McDonald was asking why in 2013 would anyone want to have done this if it wasn't for youth access. I think I have the question right. And so as the author of the bill, I thought I would ask this, and Representative Nash, I don't know you, but, you know, you're repealing a portion of my bill, so I want to recount for members, you know, why it was done. And it appears, you know, there's going to be a move this year to undo some of those tobacco taxes. I think that's unfortunate. You know, Governor Pawlenty felt the same way about tobacco taxes that I do, and the 21st Century Reform Tax Reform Commission that Governor Pawlenty put through, I think it was chaired by Mike Bekich and Ward Innes, proposed to raise taxes on tobacco. And it's wildly popular. Overwhelmingly, Minnesotans support these taxes. Overwhelmingly. And if, you know, I think so part of the reason, I mean, first of all, is the science. I mean, if the testimony from the physicians earlier didn't persuade people who weren't in the room, I mean, isn't saving lives just a good enough reason right there? But obviously it isn't for some. So I do want to talk about, you know, beyond those reasons, other than that, it's been multiple people on both sides of the aisle that task force have proposed them, that it's popular, and that the science is clear. You know, what would be the reason if youth don't really participate in premium cigars? Now, we heard somebody actually who did smoke cigars as a youth, so, I mean, we know some do. It's probably smaller percentage than cigarettes, and, you know, there is, of course, the reason, you know, people often cite, did you do this for revenue? The goal for me personally as the chief author of these pieces of legislation is to never receive any revenue from tobacco. That ultimately we get to zero because no one's participating in tobacco. So it isn't to get revenue, it's to raise the cost. The science or the economics of raising the price of tobacco through taxation I would challenge anyone to refute the economics. When you raise the price of something, you get less of it. And we know the biggest driver to get people to not start engaging in these in using tobacco is to raise the price. So that was a big piece of it. But set aside, even if you don't, even if that, you know, that, you know, preventing youth from starting, and by the way, it's not just youth. A lot of people who are in their 50s and 60s and 70s quit when the price goes up. And in fact, we have, I know two people personally who worked in the Minnesota legislature as staff, one House, one Senate, who smoked over 20 years. And when we raised those tobacco taxes, they quit. That's what we want. But, you know, beyond that, even if you have, you don't believe the science and you don't care about the revenue and you don't care that it's popular and you don't even care if youth start, the recouping of the costs of the state budget is significant. We're raising taxes on everybody else more to pick up the health care costs of these products. And the taxes on them are not even beginning to hit the true costs in Representative Dean's budget. The analysis that has been done by nonpartisan people around the country shows that you'd have to raise, let's say, on a pack of cigarettes, you'd have to raise the tax maybe $17 per pack to pick up the cost that all the rest of us are paying. So think of it as a user fee. Even if you don't care about it from a libertarian standpoint, you should make the users of it pay for it, the true health care costs that we're all paying for. So, you know, I really just wanted to cite to Representative McDonald the numerous reasons why I carried that this tax that we're talking about today and many others. And, you know, I will just say that I think we know where the tax bill is going. This is the second bill we've heard to give tax cuts to the tobacco industry. When I passed the biggest one in there was cigarettes, and, you know, overwhelmingly the now majority was very opposed to that. It is a regressive tax. There are some things that are negative about it, but I would anticipate that we will see the new majority also repeal the cigarette tax to be consistent with their positions of the last 2 years. We just haven't heard that bill yet, but I just wanted to get on the record the many reasons those of us who advocate for tax increases on these products feel that way, and I actually hope in the future we can raise them higher. Thank you.
Chair Lancheski, are you looking for consistency?
In what regard?
You just mentioned that we'd be consistent.
Well, I'm just guessing that when we've already heard a bill to repeal one set of tobacco taxes and today we're hearing another, that, you know, why not repeal it all? We should repeal all the tobacco taxes I raised. Don't just repeal part of them. Repeal all of them. And if no, you're not going to be consistent, I think we'll be able to afford you that opportunity for a vote for that on the floor. So.
And Chair Lancheski, I've proposed in the past banning them all together, but then I get from certain people saying, oh, no, we need the revenue. So,
well, Mr. Chair, and I've heard you say that, and I would support a ban. I know not everybody feels that way, and that might be those people who want the revenue. I mean, as again, I've stated for the record, I don't want the revenue. I want our taxes on tobacco to come in at zero every year because nobody's using them. And if, you know, if saving lives isn't enough for folks, I mean, you know, that's fine. But I think people, you know, have strong feelings about protecting the ability for people to not pay taxes on tobacco or to pay lower taxes on tobacco. I mean, you know, if the health care costs in Reps and Dean's committee doesn't convince you, you know, I don't know. There's nothing else I can say.
Thank you. And just an aside here, members, we don't want to be questioning members' intentions as to why they carried a bill. You know, speak to the bill, not to the author. I was asked the other day why I carried a bill in 1993, and I said, I don't know, I can't remember what it was even. But we shouldn't be questioning why members did certain things, but we can certainly question the issue itself. Chair Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard testimony suggesting that that this tax benefits big corporations, and maybe Mr. Michael can help us out, but as far as I understand it, the tax is paid by people.
Yes.
And is that, Mr. Michael, am I missing something? Or who's paying the tax here that we're trying to provide relief from with the bill?
Mr. Michael, who pays the tax?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski, the
taxes remitted by the distributors and the wholesalers, but I think, you know, virtually all economists recognize that ultimately the burden of tax has to somehow be borne by actual people. And, you know, I think the consensus is that most of this falls on the actual purchaser, although obviously there will be some ancillary effect on the people that own tobacco, you know, the own the people that own the companies that produce and sell this and work for those companies too. So,
Chair Graskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Michael. And I think, members, that's an important thing. These, like virtually all taxes, these are people. These are our constituents. These are Minnesotans that are paying this tax. It's not some, you know, big bad corporation somewhere. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, I have quite a list and a growing list, and that's fine. We don't have any deadlines, so I'm not going to cut anybody off, but I do want to know from Chair Dabney if your testifier traveled more than 50 miles.
In what period of time?
In this morning.
This morning. I'm gonna guess not.
Okay.
Unless you got really lost.
Okay, so we'll try, because after this we've got Dr. Spry and others. So, but we will, I'm not going to cut anybody off. We don't have deadlines. That's the cool thing about the tax committee. Many cool things about the tax committee. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to mention some of the things that Chair Lanchesky said, since she mentioned my name. Certainly I will not refute the science of a tax and or the health impact of cigarette smoking. But I'm going to comment on something you said, Chair, that's even, I think, more important than the bill that we're discussing. And I want everybody to get their pen and paper out and write this down, because this is a fact as well. Chair Lanchesky, you said, and it's perfect for the Tax Committee, I think, and then you can think about this as we continue to debate. When you raise the price of something, you get less of it. That's the fact. As Minnesota continues to raise the tax on everything, from cigarettes, I won't debate the merits of what that does, but sales tax, income tax, corporate tax, property tax, 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 etc., you will get less of it. That's the facts. Just the facts. And that's all I have to say about that. So when you raise the price of something, you get less of it. That's what Chair Lanchesky said. That's the facts. Let's keep that in mind as we continue to raise the tax and tax and tax here in Minnesota, where we're some of the highest tax state on many things and many issues, corporate tax, property tax, income tax in the nation. We'll get less of it.
Okay, and since the name of Lanchesky was invoked, we'll go out of order if there's any response requested.
Only to say, Mr. Chair, that, again, people feel so strongly. The current minority did raise taxes on wealthy Minnesotans, the top 2%, and the cigarette tax, and we closed some corporate loopholes, and we anticipate you will repeal all of those. Your speech was perfect. And if those things are not in the omnibus tax bill, with $2 billion, you can do every one of those. You can repeal the fourth tier, repeal the cigarette tax, and you can reopen those corporate loopholes. Just go right ahead, and we'll get that all on the roll call. As it relates to all these other issues, all these other taxes, those have not been raised. Not in the time I've been here, Governor Plenty, for 8 years, the only tax increase he signed was cigarette tax. Under Speaker Kelleher, there were no new taxes imposed because Plenty took care of those. Representative Speaker Zellers did not raise any taxes. Yes, Speaker Thiessen and I, as the chief author, raised the fourth tier on the top 2%, cigarette tax, and closed some corporate loopholes. That is the law. You can ask Mr. Michael what taxes were raised. That's what they are. They're not all the other ones people say. And in fact, the new tax incidence report showed taxes went down for 90% of Minnesotans. But you now have the authority, Representative McDonald and all the rest of you, to repeal all those taxes that we passed in 2013. You can untax the rich, you can untax the tobacco industry, and you can reopen the corporate loopholes. And we anticipate we will see that yet this year in the omnibus tax bill, or we'll know that people didn't mean it. And I appreciate that we have a philosophical difference about how to balance the state budget.
And again, Chair Lencheski, just because when the tax bill comes out, if it doesn't repeal everything, it's not necessarily that we are in love with the tax or we didn't mean it. We'll be coming out with the tax bill. It'll be an awesome document.
Awesome what?
An awesome document, one for the ages. And so just because you don't see it the way you think, don't try to read my mind. There's just nothing there to read. it's an attempt at you're gonna fail on that issue. So it'll be just an awesome tax bill, but because it may not undo everything that was done, doesn't mean we like it. But that's okay. With that, we'll go. I didn't see your name today,
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Earhart.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Representative Jaskowski and McDonald, yes, I mean, you talk about who pays the taxes, and if the it isn't a tobacco company that is paying the taxes, except it means that more of the product becomes saleable to whoever's buying it if you take the tax away, because it's cheaper. You're going to sell more. And the point is that we don't want to sell more tobacco, and that's why the taxes were put on there by health impact fee by Plenty, and last year to raise some more money. And Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, is there a positive flow of any taxes from the tobacco settlement still left, or has that all been made into bonds and what have you?
It's all gone. It's
still coming. Mr. Michael?
I'm looking for some more money here, and I'm just wondering if there's...
For Mr. Payment or Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, the tobacco revenues are pledged to pay the tobacco bonds, but I would have to go look at this, but I believe that there's more tobacco revenue than is absolutely necessary to pay the principal and interest, and so that does revert back to the general fund, but I would have to check on that. This is not something that I deal with regularly to find out, to make sure that that is in fact. I'm sure that's the case because the bonds have to have, you know, fairly good security, and that means you have to have revenues that are more than what, you know, the bare principal and interest is on them.
Chair Earhart, I think you found some money.
Yes, well, I will wait the report on that before I spend it. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I mean, probably the worst tax policy ever was carrying a bill to defease the tobacco bonds. I mean, who carried that?
I think we
did. Oh, I did? Oh. And I was right. That was a tough one. I mean, that's kind of the stuff I deal in. And well, whatever. Just to correct the record, I believe, too, Mr. Michael, I don't believe Governor Plenty signed a cigarette tax, but wasn't it a fee?
Health
impact fee.
But in Cranky's words, it's a tax.
Mr. Chair?
Chair Jaskowski.
I think my name was invoked. So
it was, and yeah. So was McDonald's. Right. Chair Jaskowski. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well,
You can think.
I appreciate the member that that invoked that name. So,
Earhart.
Well, I didn't say that. You know, I'm really kind of intrigued by what Representative McDonald is really exposing here, along with another member who exposed it earlier, and that is the fact that the more you tax, the less you get, and that's what the design of this bill is. So it's very clear. And as we continue to tax other things, and there was a proposal last biennium to increase the tax on beer. It was to go from $4.40 a barrel up to $28 a barrel, Madam Chair, something like that, 27, 28, somewhere in there. So we want to control what people drink or don't drink. I've seen proposals come through here to increase the tax on snacks. We want to socially engineer what people eat or don't eat. The nanny state of Minnesota is continuing to grow around its fiscal decisions. The other thing that really strikes me is When we raise income tax on people, what are we reducing there? Work. We are disincentivizing work by taxing people's labor. What does that do for our economy? The more you tax, the less you get of it. The more we tax people's work, the less they're going to want to work. The less our economy is going to be vibrant. Something for us to remember. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash, should I welcome you to the Tax Committee?
I felt welcome briefly.
Okay. Representative McDonald.
Are you still here?
Yeah, speaking of the author, did you see any more of those donuts from yesterday?
No, but I said he was okay to be here today.
Okay. Well, say, just to respond to the chair, since my name was invoked, you know, politicians and even the Irish are guilty of it, and Chair Lencheski, you told me you're, what, half Irish or so? We do tend to exaggerate. And we're not suggesting that you get rid of taxes completely. But you know, because we're the third highest corporate income tax rate and the fifth highest business property tax burden in the nation and the fifth highest per capita income tax burden in the nation and the seventh highest sales tax burden in the nation, yes, it is time to lessen the tax. Period. Not get rid of them totally. We have some services that the state must do. We all recognize that. Some core principles and priorities. But to tax people to the point that they're leaving the state or that we take the fruits of their labor, frankly, that's not American. And so don't exaggerate saying we want to get rid of all taxes. That's just not the case.
Anybody have any comments on the bill? Chair Lencheski, your name was invoked.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to Petersburg.
Keep going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a little bit about me. I have never smoked in my life, and my late wife, Carol, never smoked in her life, yet she died from lung cancer. And the doctor said that very likely it had to do with secondhand smoke that her ex-husband had smoked prior to our marriage. That certainly was one of the contributing factors to it. So I have no love of cigarettes, tobacco, or anything else. But as I have listened to debate over the last few months here in Tax Committee and others, I have come to realize that sometimes we also use, or at least appears to me, that we're trying to use tax policy to influence behavior. And it's not the taxes themselves that are reducing the behavior, but rather their incentive to do so. And so I think that certainly has been somewhat effective. But I'm very concerned about the slippery slope that can create when we need to understand first and foremost that tobacco is legal. And so it is up to an individual's choice on whether or not they smoke. Alcohol is legal. And we could increase those taxes as well if we want to pursue that. You know, I go to other things about vegetarians and medical people say we really ought to cut down on the amount of red meat that we ought to be eating. So are we going to be taxing red meat at a level so that we can reduce that? And so the question becomes, you know, is this the proper way of dealing with people's behavior is in tax policy? You know, we've heard about the high cost of health care from cancer and other things, and do we ever recoup that in taxes? And the answer was no, that I heard. But we have other things that we do in a daily life that takes a toll on human life and injury. That's called driving a car. We kill people on a regular basis, so we have injury that occurs. We don't have any taxing authority there that it recoups that as well. So how do we make that distinction about why we make this particular policy in regards to taxes? I'm just concerned that this is a slippery slope, one that we want to be very careful about how we use it. And the last comment that I would make is I've heard so much about, well, the tobacco companies are getting this tax break. The reality is it's the individual who's buying a legal product that is legal for them to do is getting the tax break. And yes, it impacts all business that has to do with the supply and demand, and that does make an impact. I'm just asking for us to kind of have some common sense in what we do and why we do it, and figure out, are there better ways and better approaches that we handle? And that's my two cents worth. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. To the bill, House File 1544, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And tax policy does affect behavior. And we saw the biggest drop ever in our history in not just youth smoking, but adult smoking. So, and then nothing else changed. We didn't send out more advertisements saying, do not smoke. We didn't put, you know, lectures in every school building. We raised the tax, and it had a dramatic impact. And we heard compelling testimony from an individual who saw that in her own life and the life of her family. But it also affects corporate behavior. And, you know, while I've been on the tax committee, it seems like every time we do something with our tax laws as it affects the corporation and their products, they are amazingly creative. And so Representative Loon and others have had brought in bills afterwards. I think maybe some people on our side have done that as well, dealing with, you know, the little cigars. It really are kind of cigarettes, but you put certain additives in them, and then they fall under cigar taxation. And you put a little bubblegum flavoring or grape or strawberry, whatever's in with the young set, and all of a sudden you got a new introductory product. And I am really concerned about, and I don't think we've heard any compelling testimony on line 1.9, which is we are going to change the definition of a premium cigar. And right now a premium cigar has to be hand-constructed and hand-rolled. And there's just a little three-word deletion there that the industry would like, which is to take away hand-rolled. So all of a sudden you can mass-produce these. Hand-constructed may mean that you throw the tobacco into the hopper. I don't know how far you have to go down to meet that threshold. But my concern is that we're going to have a lot of inexpensive, low-quality, quote, premium cigars marketed to vulnerable populations, and successfully getting new addicts into using, quote, premium cigars because it'll be marketed as a status symbol. We have seen, you know, this over and over, this sort of bait and switch. And the discussion has been increasingly about, you know, the $50 cigars. You know, there aren't many people who buy $50 cigars. But we heard testimony that North Minneapolis from Ms. Vito that you can buy $6 premium cigars under our current definition. And they're going to go down to $3 or $2.50 if they're now at $5 to $6. And so now when we open it up to machine manufactured, we might end up with $1.50 or $1. And that's really affordable for a lot of people who, no matter where you live, people seem to find money for their vices or their habits. And I don't think we have any testimony in front of us that says there's any need for us to change the definition of premium cigar that we have in law. And I haven't heard any customers come forward and say they've tried these machine ones and they think they're really premium. We've only heard from from people who are in the business of selling these products. And I think that we really need to delete that part of the bill. In addition, I think we need to keep the prices up because it has proven to be effective. And the caucus that's in the majority this year has set a very high burden upon the Health and Human Services Committee to cut $1.1 billion out of its budget. And we've heard testimony that the state of Minnesota is already paying $3 billion in health care costs out of that same budget for tobacco-related health care costs. And it doesn't make sense for us to be cutting that budget, the health care and the services that people who are disabled by emphysema or other problems, health-associated problems caused by tobacco, and at the same time reduce the income of the into Minnesota and the best prevention tool we could ever have. There's a lot of skeptics about prevention. It takes a while to prove that it works, but this had immediate results. documented, scientifically surveyed immediate results that ended up with us seeing the largest decrease ever in our effort. And so I think that I would like to move to delete the rules, the words, and hand-rolled from the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we have a Loeffler amendment on page 1. Basically, you're deleting section 1.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Michael, could you please state the amendment for members?
Mr. Chairman, the amendment would be to amend House File 1544 on page 1, delete section 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, discussion to the amendment, Representative Loeffler.
And I'd like a roll call.
Roll call. We will have a roll call. To the Chair Knobloch. I'm now going off the list, and we're starting kind of a new list for the amendment, so we'll come back to the old list. Chair Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chair, this isn't the Ways and Means Committee or the Health and Human Services Committee, but before I ask Mr. Representative Nash a question on the amendment, I do want to tell people who are listening that we are actually proposing to increase spending in the Health and Human Services Committee by $443 million over what it's estimated in 14 and 15. And that is just the general fund. If you consider other funds, federal funds, other funds, it's still estimated to be a multi-billion dollar increase. But to the amendment, Representative Nash, I guess I wondered about this when it first came forward yesterday, too. Can you talk a little bit more about what it means to be eliminating these three words and hand-rolled? I guess I don't know a great deal about cigars. I guess I don't know anything about how they're made. Can you talk about exactly what the difference would be if we kept this language in or took it out?
Representative Nash?
Mr. Chair, Chair Knobloch, thank you for the question. The end result is the same. The cigar is essentially the same end product. The manufacturing process has become such that it can be machine-made with the same level of quality, same material, same end product. It's just done in a mechanized process.
Chair Knobloch?
But, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nash, then if it can be machine-constructed, how can the language that is before the proposed amendment that says hand-constructed still be applicable?
Nash.
Mr. Chair, Chair Knobloch, you know, the definition of a premium cigar was set prior to this bill being, or my bill, or the amendment, or the strike being put forward, as having to the need to be entirely made of a full leaf exterior wrapper, with long tobacco in as the filler. So we're just amending that to allow the machine made version of that to then be included in this.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, so what I understand is that there would still be some hand construction in one of these cigars, I guess just maybe not as much as there used to be.
Representative Nash?
Mr. Chair, Chair Knobloch, my understanding is yes.
Oh, thank you.
Representative Knobloch? Okay, before we get into more members' questions on the amendment, is there anyone in the audience which testify on behalf in favor of the amendment or against with concerns on the amendment? And the department like to weigh in on this. Okay, smart guy. Okay, with that further discussion from members on the amendment, Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
not on the amendment.
Yesterday we did have a good discussion on this, on what it meant, and I was satisfied with the description given by the store owners that are the ones that actually sell this product. And I would speak in opposition to the amendment and hope that you support Representative Nash's bill as is.
Further discussion. Okay. Any remarks to wrap it up on the amendment?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that by going from hand-rolled to machined, it's going to be less expensive, more mass-producing. It'll lower the price, and we'll have more of what many people around this table have said, which we don't want, these marketed to young people. And so I would appreciate your support.
Okay. The legislative assistant will call the roll.
Davids?
No.
Barrett? Lincheski?
Yes.
Anderson?
No.
Anzels? Carlson?
Aye.
Dabney?
Aye.
Drazkowski?
No.
Earhart?
Yes.
Erickson?
No.
Garofalo? Hackbarth?
No.
Knobloch?
No.
Koznick?
No.
Lesh? Loeffler?
Yes.
Loon?
Pass.
McDonald? Moline?
No.
Petersburg?
No.
Simonson? Slocum? Swedinsky? Torkelson?
No.
Wills?
No.
With a count of 5 ayes and 11 nays, the amendment is not adopted.
Okay, thank you. Representative Loeffler, you still have the floor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just do believe that we really need to look out for the long-term health of our population, and I think that keeping tax policy as it is would be the right way to move forward, and appreciate the committee's consideration.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Chair Anderson S.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash, I had some other obligations during the tax committee hearing yesterday, but there was some comments talking about that these business owners are paying as much as 95% of a tax. Can you kind of walk me through that piece again and how much these business owners are having to pay in tax on this product?
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair and Chair Anderson, so the way the bill is written, it's either 95% or 350 as the cap. And on the premium cigars, which is what we're trying to address here, it's the 350 that we're trying to repeal to 50 cents. So, I do have a testifier that can maybe speak to that in addition. Mr. Holton, if you'd like to come down. But essentially, yes, the repeal is for the 350. The 95% is still going to apply, as I understand it, and if legal counsel would like to address that as well, or Mr. Holton, that's a fair question.
Well,
Chair Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to belabor the committee process anymore. I'm looking at the letter here that you had from one of your testifiers yesterday, and what strikes me is that we are basically driving business out of the state of Minnesota. And it's not stopping behavior. Instead, it's just changing where they purchase the product. And I think that that's problematic as a policy as a state that I don't think we should be driving business out of the state and closing up these shops. And appreciate you bringing this forward, and I'll be supporting the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair and Chair Anderson, thank you for the question. That's exactly my point is, we have been told that the increase in this tax has decreased the sales of cigars in our state, and I would disagree respectfully. I would say that many of the cigar shop owners are being told, as you hear in the testimony that's submitted in writing by my constituent, that it's not evaporating, it's not causing fewer people to use cigars. The purchasers are going to the internet, or the purchasers are driving across the border to Hudson, Wisconsin, or to somewhere in the Dakotas, or into Iowa, and that's the whole reason to do this bill. And let me say, given that my intent was questioned, I don't know anybody in big tobacco, and I'm not wearing a very expensive suit at this particular juncture. This is really about protecting business owners in my district. That was the rationale for me bringing it, and it was also at the encouragement of people who are my friends who also enjoy a cigar. And they said, look, I won't buy from a local company because it's outrageously expensive. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Chair Anderson S. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And much has been made this morning about the idea, correct, I believe, that the more you tax something, the less you get of it. And I agree. I just should remind members that what we will get less of if we leave this tax in place is less lung cancer, mouth cancer, tongue, esophageal, and larynx cancers. Cervical cancers was testified to. Fewer heart attacks, fewer strokes, less emphysema, less chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and less health insurance costs to the state and people of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, we've kind of gone beyond what I was going to point out, but I will comment. The other day I commented that my father had been a World War II vet, went in as a non-smoker, came out literally as a chain smoker as a result of being prisoner of war and a number of issues. But I'm a non-smoker, and I grew up in a household secondhand smoke. Anytime there's an article in a paper or magazine dealing with secondhand smoke, believe me, I read that, because that's the environment that I grew up in. And you know, my father, he had five children, and he loved each and every one of us, and I don't think he would have knowingly harmed a single one of us. And yet, in those days, we just didn't recognize the damage that secondhand smoke could cause or create. And we've talked a lot about the smoker and the health care issues there. We've talked a little less about innocent people that may be in an environment where they're being exposed to the secondhand smoke. And what came to my mind earlier in the meeting was that advertisement where it shows a mother lighting up a cigarette in the car and the baby in the car seat. And the message there is, of course, the exposure to secondhand smoke. So I think this is a lot broader. And the other point I was going to make, one of our large drugstore chains has made the determination, and there was quite a bit of publicity about that a few months ago, where they're eliminating the sale of cigarettes. The reason I bring that up, there is a huge movement in this country that wants to do all that we can to remove or to move away from smoking because of the health impact it has on not only the smoker but other people as well. And just as an aside, my wife and I were with a different drugstore chain, and we transferred our prescriptions. We're relatively good health, so we're not major consumers but of prescription medicines, but we did move them to that particular chain for that reason, because they were moving, in our view, in the right direction. And if my wife were here, if you wanted to really hear a few comments about smoking, my comments would be pretty low-key compared to hers. But I'll stop it there, and I don't expect a response, and I didn't name anybody.
Thank you, Ms. Chair Carlson. Thank you. Chair Earhart.
Mr. Chairman, philosophically, I suppose we are driving the, by increasing taxes, the tobacco shops out of business or out of the state. But we're doing the same thing with massage parlors when we overregulate them and raise the fees on them and so forth. We're driving them out of business and out of state too, but we're doing that philosophically because we don't think they're being productive for the for society.
Thank you, Chair Earhart. And that's the end of my list, so unless there's other member discussion, Chair Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question or a question for the author. These cigars are sold in a variety of places, right? Not just in these particular cigar shops, correct?
Grips of Nash.
Mr. Chair and Chair Erickson, there are places that a premium cigar can be sold and purchased legally that are regulated as to who can and cannot purchase there. You may find them at the occasional liquor store that will have a humidor, but the purveyors of premium cigars are heavily regulated as to whom and whom they cannot sell to. So yes, you can purchase elsewhere, but they are primarily being sold at tobacconists.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just had a comment because I think the cultural change began toward a decrease in smoking when the Surgeon General issued his report some 55 years ago. And on that day, my father quit smoking. And that was a very memorable moment for me because I worked side by side with him in our grain elevator, and he started carrying a bottle of olives in his overall pocket, so that when he had this desire to smoke, he chewed on an olive, and he was super skinny, so he could chew on olives. But that just sticks with me. As we were shoveling grain into boxcars, and I'm working side by side with my dad, it was the Surgeon General who changed the culture.
So your dad was skinny, and it was olives. I'm going to take a note of that. Okay.
Don't tax olives.
Tax credit refundable. Okay, with that, I will move to lay House File 1544 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Nash, and thank you, members, for a very respectful discussion here. Thank you. Item next, I will take House File 1775 from the chair here. What this bill does, just a little bit of history on this one. This is one where I believe Chair Garofalo offered in the tax incident study to have federal taxes included. And so it became law in 11, and I believe it was repealed in 13. And for the tax incident study, this bill would simply say that revenue will include federal taxes in the tax incident study. And first of all, before we go to the doctor here, is there anyone in the audience who wish to testify on behalf of the bill? Anyone who wish to testify with concerns on the bill? Anybody that really cares about the bill? Does the department wish to comment on the bill? Okay, I don't see the department, so we better do this one quick. Okay, so with that being said, my favorite college professor of all time, Dr. John Spry, is with us here today. So if you'd like to make, so I don't believe we have anyone else here to testify, but Dr. Spry, if you could please testify to the bill, then we'll open it up for member questions.
Okay. Good morning. My name is John Spry, and I'm here as a private citizen from St. Paul, and all the errors are my own. And I wanted to start, and we'll have a presentation on the screen in a second, by pointing out that currently the Minnesota Tax Instance Study asks the question, who pays the slice of state and local taxes paid by Minnesota residents that Minnesota and its localities collect from the point of view of Minnesota based on a one-year snapshot in time? So it does not ask, for example, a question that WCCO got in February from a viewer, Bill in Golden Valley, how much do we pay in taxes? It does not ask the question that many members of this committee have asked, which is who pays the taxes that are paid by Minnesotans when you look at all taxes, not just a slice of taxes.
Dr. Spry, I have a question on the first slide. It says associate professor. What do we got to do about that?
Yes, you have to wait 7 years at my university after you're promoted associate professor to be eligible to apply for a promotion to full professor.
How's it looking?
We have a new dean, and so hopefully maybe I can turn this into an article in state tax notes, and it would look better.
Okay. Anything I can do, I'd certainly like to help. You know, when we have, like, assistant commissioners, we try to get them up to deputy, and so I'm just trying to help here. Please proceed, sir.
Thank you. So this bill actually would personally have helped me. I gave a link to the committee administrator because WCCO got so many viewers wanting to know how much we paid in taxes. I had to help them out, and right now that's pretty hard because you tried to take the Minnesota deciles from the tax instance study for state and local taxes and the federal tax deciles from the Congressional Budget Office or the Tax Policy Center of the Urban Brookings Institution, and you have like what's called a crosswalk. It's hard to combine because our first decile is different than their first decile, and Minnesotans have a little bit different income. Fortunately, it's higher than the federal government. So this leads to just confusion. It's the kind of thing I see in class. So our governor, for example, was asked by a constituent who had her question, which is, when she earns a dollar of income, how much does that
that how much of that does she get to keep, and the governor said that tax instance studies show that Minnesotans pay about 12.8% in state and local taxes, and that's accurate if you don't include her state and local taxes paid by Minnesotans somewhere else, based on the study that was available then. But then the governor said you get 87.2% of every dollar. And, of course, that's just kind of a mistake because he forgot to add in the federal taxes, in part because that data isn't readily available to the administration, the public, and members of the legislature. So with that confusion, it's not just policymakers. A former chair of the tax committee has been kind of imprecise in saying things. But to move along, Professor Joel Slimrod from the University of Michigan has an article in the National Tax Journal where in a poll, 51% of respondents think that middle-income families currently pay a higher percent of income in taxes than high-income families, when that's not true, when you look at all taxes paid. So the screen isn't quite working. I have the updated data from the Congressional Budget Office for 2013 on the distribution of income. And so if you look at the middle group, federal taxes, all federal taxes, is about 12.3% of income for people in the middle 20% of the income distribution. For people in the top 1%, that's about 3%. For people that are in the bottom 20% of the federal income distribution, that's only 2.9%. And the general rule in tax policy is if you want to really get progressivity, the best tool is federal taxes because there are fewer issues of mobility. So I think when we get the next slide up, we can just go over.
You're on page 4.
Yeah, I'm on page 4, the bottom slide. This is from the Congressional Budget Office, and you can see that the most progressive tax is the federal individual income tax. And in fact, for the lowest 40% of the population, that's negative because of the refundable nature of the earned income tax credit at the federal level. That's a deliberate policy. So you can see quite steeply federal individual income taxes. Payroll taxes are somewhat flat with a dip at the top. Then you can see the instance of federal corporate tax and excise taxes. And so if you're looking for right now, the Tax Policy Center has their estimate of the current distribution of federal taxes. It's steeply progressive. And when you add this on to state and local taxes, it's pretty clear that the entire tax system is progressive. So one of the things I wanted to point out that sometimes isn't as appreciated as I think it is, should be, is that because of the federal taxes, and we just heard discussion when you tax something, you get less of it. Because of the federal taxes, that shrinks the size of our Minnesota state income tax base and our Minnesota corporate income tax base. In fact, I would think the surplus might be nearing $10 billion if it wasn't that your tax base was shrank because you share the same corporate and income tax base with the federal government, and that reduces your tax collections. In addition, as Chair Knobloch mentioned, there's a lot of spending in the Minnesota government, particularly in HHS, that comes from federal revenue. And I wanted to point out that just like this committee and your colleagues in the other chamber give the power to tax to local governments, Minnesotans right here in St. Paul in our state legislature have voted to change federal tax policy as members of the Minnesota legislature. For example, on June 11, 1912, the Minnesota legislature ratified giving the power to have corporate and personal income taxes to the federal government. Minnesota, through the legislature, also removed the power to tax intoxicating liquors by creating prohibition. And then, very interesting, it was not the Minnesota legislature, that it was our citizens that were elected to a ratifying convention, repealed prohibition, and restored the ability of the federal government to tax the sale of alcohol. So there's
Mr. Spry, do you have any information on those three bullet points there, what the debates were like at that time? Those must have been some...
At the risk of making a joke, perhaps the debates were interesting, but some people would say at least part one side of the debate was rather dry.
Please proceed.
Oh
yeah, smoke-filled rooms in the dark at night with the price.
So to move on, a couple other things to keep in mind, particularly when words like the rich and the wealthy are used, opposed to people that have a high income for a particular year, is that incomes fluctuate from year to year and over the life cycle. So another way you could do tax incidence that would, I think, complement using annual income is to look at lifetime income, particularly Professor Metcalf has published a paper that looks at using consumption as a proxy for lifetime income. And when you do that, you find that, for example, the regressive nature of sales taxes is largely due to looking at a one-year window versus lifetime instance, that broad-based sales taxes are about as progressive as state and local taxes, and the tax incidence of property taxes is different if you look at a lifetime perspective, like who over their lifetime is wealthy or rich or middle income or poor versus a one-year snapshot in time. And I think it's also important for this committee, but particularly for the Ways and Means Committee, to think about not just progressivity in the tax system, but progressivity in the expenditure side. And sometimes there's a tendency to have what Navy pilots call target fixation. You look so much at the target that you lose situational awareness. And so if you want to have more progressive policies as a general rule, you want to see, is it better to do this through the tax code or through expenditure programs? What would work better for compliance and administration, not what would show up in the tax instance study versus what wouldn't show up in the tax instance study?
Dr. Spry, on page 7, on the top thing there, you're quoting Professor Jonathan Gruber of MIT. Do you think those comments are accurate?
Yes. This is from his textbook. And
not from his Minsure projection.
This is not from consulting they did specifically for Minnesota, but he's also making the point that I think the word misleading that he's using is also in the tax instance study report, that if you just look at a one-year snapshot in time, for example, the vast majority of people that report a federal taxable income of $1 million or more only appear for 1 out of 9 years in a window. So it's oftentimes somebody selling their business, or, for example, you may see in Minnesota people that were longtime owners of a medical device company that recently forced them to sell their shares will pop up into that group and drop back below. So I think the general point Professor Gruber's quote makes is true. And in fact, I would ask, on a lifetime perspective, it'd be really interesting to learn what percent of Minnesotans will end up in that top fourth tier for at least 1 year as a member of a household. That'd be a fascinating number to know. But I'm trying to move things along. I think it's really good to look at the question that the tax instance study currently looks at, but it would be good because so many people have asked about it, not just in this room, but asking WCCO to include the federal tax instance data in the future. It would make my life easier so that when I get media inquiries, I don't have to take 2 hours to try to put together two sets of numbers, but I can take 15 minutes and show them a single report. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Doctor. And members, we will be out of here at noon. I do have a Dabney and Carlson bill left here, but I do want to open up for questions to Dr. Spry. Questions for members? Okay, thank you. I will move that House File 1775 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Tax Bill. Doctor, thank you. Thank you for your information. Okay, item next, let's go Dabney. And that's the next one on my list here. Dabney, or on my pile. If you could please join us here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Out of deference to seniority and the fact that it looks like my testifier stepped out to the bathroom, could
no, Representative...
Oh, she is. She's back. Oh, good.
She took
good
business. And
so much for seniority.
So much for seniority.
Deference only gets you so much.
You know, this whole thing about seniority, I, being the senior member of my caucus, I like it better every day that goes by. But the reason I think
but
I'm
being a junior member of the legislature, Mr. Chairman.
That's true. I hope no offense is taken because I think yours might take a little bit longer. This one we should be able to fly through, I think, unless...
The only question would be, I think my testifier is here as well, but I'm on the committee, so I...
We'll do our best.
Personally,
but she's kind of around all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, Chair Dabney moves House File 89. Are there any amendments? Seeing none, please present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to direct members' attention to lines 1.11 and 1.12 in House File 89. It's the existing statute. This deals with whether we make life a little bit easier for college students and waive sales tax for required instructional materials. If you look at the existing statute, it's fairly clear. Instructional materials means materials required to be used directly in the completion of the course of study, including but not limited to. The challenge, Mr. Chair, is the department is taking the list that followed in existing statute, and rather than using that as examples, including but not limited to, they're instead applying this policy in a limited manner only to those items stated in statute. This creates a burden for students and a challenge for providers. With me today, I have one of those providers who has a bit of a story to tell about the challenges that her institution has faced with this and their students, more important.
And I hope it's a short story. Okay, with that being said, is there anyone in the audience which testify on behalf of the bill? Anyone with concerns? Does the department wish to testify? Okay, please proceed. And your name, please, for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Carrie Johnson Palava, and I am co-owner and director of Centerpoint Massage and Shiatsu Therapy School and Clinic.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'll try and be brief. I am in support of House File 89 due to the experience that I had with the Department of Revenue. And it deals with the issue of the interpretation of instructional materials. As a company and an accredited school, we have been very vigilant to stay current with regulations and to pay all appropriate taxes and fees. We've been very careful to get information about the policies and to inquire with the Department of Revenue when there is a question. I have an experience I'd like to share with you. The Department of Revenue conducted a sales tax audit of my school in December 2012. We had confirmed over the years prior to this audit through phone calls to the department as how to collect the required sales tax for students' required materials, including textbooks, manuals, equipment, lab fees, charts, and supplies. We followed exactly what the Department of Revenue's assistance telephone line told us to do. We taxed exactly as they gave us guidelines. We had no reason to believe that they had given us incorrect information. We were also using the published information on Fact Sheet 111, which includes the definition of instructional materials. During our sales tax audit, we learned that instructional materials, the current interpretation is limited to only textbooks, written manuals, or the electronic equivalent. As a result, we had many years of back sales tax that we needed to pay and were unable to collect from our students. And that was all through the guidance of the Department of Revenue. I was sure that during an appeal that this would be forgiven, and it was not. Vocational education in Minnesota plays a very important part. Vocational education teaches skills to students who are very employable upon completion of their education. My massage school is considered vocational education. We have a 93% placement rate of our graduates, which is extremely high. Vocational education is not just academics. We teach skills. In order for students to learn the skills, students need to purchase the equipment and the supplies to practice their skills while they're in the programs. Our students need to practice 3 to 4 bodywork sessions every week outside of the classroom. They're required to purchase a massage table or a shiatsu mat, lotions and linens at the beginning of their education. They can't practice their skills without this equipment. We teach sciences, a lot of sciences, in a kinesthetic model. Our students build the human musculature out of clay on a skeletal model. This teaches the layering of the muscular system, which muscles are deep and intrinsic and which are superficial. And if anyone on this committee has received a massage, you will want your therapist to know the difference. We teach shiatsu, which is a form of therapeutic bodywork from Japan.
Ms. Bolova, if I could, is there anyone in the audience that is against this bill? Does the department does the department want to testify on this bill?
Not on the bill, Mr. Chair.
Then on what?
If the Department of Revenue brought up the conversation, we'd like the opportunity.
You know the
committee. Have you been brought up? Oh, you have been brought up. Oh, you used their name.
Well, but we didn't use his name, Mr. Chair.
We didn't use his name. That's true.
And the usual committee rule.
I'm trying to get to the senior member of the legislature's bill in short order, but I won't cut anybody off. Aren't you about done?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And wonderful testimony. And I do patronize your industry. And every week, Monday morning at 7, it's just awesome. I don't go to the chiropractor hardly at all anymore because of it, just so you know. And I like chiropractors too, by the way. So that being said, could you wrap up maybe?
Mr. Chair, yes, I can. I just want to say that there is a bias in the interpretation of the instructional materials definition, and it discriminates against vocational education. And we use textbooks, but there is a bias towards academia and against vocational education when there is sales tax on equipment and supplies and not on textbooks. And so in the interest of students who are in vocational education, I think I would support House File 89 and ask that all required material, instructional materials, be tax-free.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pullova, and thank you for what you do. With that being said, the department, and then we'll go to members' questions. And then with the clock, I see I'm going to have a lot of explaining to do to Chair Carlson as to why we didn't take his first, but I'll think of something. Okay. To the bill, Mr. Cummings, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
First of all, I wanted to state that in terms of the bill, I think there are some technical or administrative things that I'll talk to Ms. Dalton about if this bill were to move forward, so on the bill. But as it relates, just as the Department of Revenue was brought up, we just wanted to state that we are working to ensure that we have a quality assurance program as it relates to our phone lines to ensure, you know, we don't have, for any phone conversation that has happened, recordings during past periods. We're reviewing what we should be doing as it relates to quality assurance related to phone calls. We obviously have a great deal of training that goes on as it relates to that. But I also just wanted to be clear as it relates to The interpretation of instructional materials. We are, you know, as it relates to how we construe exemptions, we construe exemptions appropriately and narrowly to ensure that that's done. In the early aughts, there was a bill that was brought forward related to instructional materials. And in that bill, it did include things like art supplies. So a bill was brought forward to do that. We think that art supplies is a little more on the vocational side than it is maybe a replacement for a textbook. So when that bill was moving through the legislature, the actual language of the bill changed between the time it was heard in the tax committee and the time it was in the tax bill. Now, you know, I know that there was some question about how the costs move between, but we certainly know that that the language did change. So in the final bill, as the Department of Revenue goes back and tries to interpret it, we don't believe that there that there's any sort of issue in terms of interpretation. We were trying to construe what the legislative intent was. And when we're keeping in the law things that are textbooks or replacements for textbooks, and then the legislature intentionally removed things that would be more like vocational items, that is a that is something that we need to use in order to try and figure out what is the intent of the legislature. So we believe that the legislative intent was very clear. Now, as it relates to Representative Dabney's bill, we believe that this is a policy change, and that if this policy change is considered or made, there are specific ideas or administrative elements in order to ensure that it is clear that we'll work with Ms. Dalton on and Representative Dabney as the bill moves forward.
Thank you. Any questions for members? Before we do that, Chair Carlson, I think we might be a little short. Can you come back? Okay. Would it be okay if we put you first at our next meeting?
That would be fine, Mr. Chairman, if you can pass a test. My first teaching position was in St. Charles, Minnesota, and what was the name of the sports team?
The Mighty Saints.
I honestly didn't remember so much.
He's,
it
might not even be true.
Okay, members, we'll go to questions for the department and Chair Dabney.
That was 51 years ago that I was teaching there.
And Chair Carlson will be up first the next time the tax committee meets. Questions to Chair Dabney or the department, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to Dabney, just a curiosity, for art supplies for students that are enrolled in photography courses, cameras, laptop, and printer inks, would that be included in your bill?
Chair Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, let me ask Ms. Dalton to get engaged on this, but before we get to the specifics she's able to provide, let me focus the members on lines 1.8 through 111, where that narrowly focuses this bill and existing statute. This has to be a course in a accredited post-secondary institution and that is leading to completion. So in Representative McDonald's example, if you are taking a course leading to some sort of a degree in photography, this would qualify. If I'm taking a community education course for pleasure, it does not. So it's narrowly focused on that vocational education workforce development piece. But I would like Ms. Dalton to speak to the particulars, please.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would direct you actually to paragraph B, which starts on line 17. And that basically talks about equipment, tools, and supplies required during the course of study that are generally used in the direct practice of the career or trade. So, again, if you were taking some type of certificate course in photography where you're going to get a degree or something like that, then those items would be exempt probably under this paragraph.
Representative McDonald? Okay, any other questions for Mr. Cummings or Chair Dabney or Ms. Palova? Ms. Palova, you had great testimony. I'm sorry, we kind of needed it was wonderful. Okay, So that being said, any other questions? Then Chair Dabney moves that House File 89 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Tax Bill. The first bill at our next meeting, members, will be House File 1994, a Carlson bill. And to Ms. Brown, thank you for working with us on this. I really appreciate it. Okay, with that, don't stop believing. Good government all the time. Members, have a great holiday here, Easter holiday. We are adjourned.